Welcome to the Doctors Investing Group podcast. This is episode number 69. Okay, guys, welcome back to the Doctors Investing Group podcast. This week, we are going to wrap up part two with Neil Bawa, a multifamily expert and operator. Here, talking largely about macroeconomics, and he gives quite a bit of good information here about the next few months in the multifamily space. So pay attention there. Just a friendly reminder that this is for education purposes only. There is no offer or sale of securities, and no due diligence was performed about this operator. So without further ado, let's get started. You mentioned rising interest rates. This is another hot topic. And as limited partners and investors, there seems to be kind of a growing fear in the marketplace of a rising interest rate environment. Can you highlight first, what are those risks? Like, what is the primary risk when interest rates rise? And next, tell us how those risks can be mitigated.
Of course. So I'll give you a single family example and a multifamily example because I think the risks are different, right? So on the single family side, the market's been extremely hot. We've seen, you know, 15, 20% home price increases. In my markets, we've seen 30 or 40. Like Austin, for example, it's up 44% in a year. You know, Idaho Falls is up about 34%. So when we see these markets, there is a real risk at this point of the market stalling. Okay. Most of your listeners do not know this because they're not obsessed with interest rates as much as I am. Since the beginning of the year, the 30-year interest rate has gone from 3.11% to 5.14%. 3.11 on Jan 1st to 5.14. Today, we're recording this on April 25th. That is the most dramatic increase we have seen that I have seen in history. Maybe I don't go back further than the 90s, but I have never seen interest rates go up 2 points in a 3.5 or 4 month timeframe. So it's a dramatic change. The impact of it is not visible yet. There is no data. There's no article on the web talking about, oh my God, this is massive. So we are about to see. So in May, you'll start seeing the first articles about the US home price market, single family market slowing down. By June, every other article that you read is going to talk about that slowdown. And then by July, they're going to be talking about prices falling. They won't necessarily fall, Doc, but they very easily could, there'll be a lot of speculation about decrease in home prices. It's massive though. It just between, and I don't exactly remember the price of the home, but the median home in the US, you're now having to pay $400 to $600 a month more than if you locked in your interest rate on the first. $400 to $600 knocks a bunch of people out. They simply cannot afford to buy anymore. And those people will end up being renters. So you might think, the first thing you might think about is, oh, so that's really good for Neil because he's doing multifamily. All these people are getting knocked out because of, you know, interest rate hikes. And the answer is not necessarily. It sort of depends. I still want this airplane, which is coming down because, you know, interest rates are going up. So the economy, or at least the real estate economy, cools down. I want it to be on a glide path because I don't want it to be crashing, because if it crashes, it goes under and takes, you know, everything down. It takes me down as well. Right. So we'll see a decline in rents, which have been growing beautifully in the last 18 months, boosting our profits. So I'm worried, and everyone should be worried at this point. This is actually one of those times where if you don't have to put your money in today, let's say you have 1031, so you have to put your money in. If you don't, this is an incredible time, April, May, and June of this year, to just sit, wait, and watch, because there's a very big turn coming and nobody really knows how big a turn. It may be a big deal. It may not be a big deal. But this is, in my mind, April, May, and June of this year, horrible time to make new investments into either multifamily or single family, because you're at a very rapid pivot. You know, pivots happen all the time and they typically shouldn't worry anyone. But this pivot is extraordinary. And you might think, well, it's only single family and you're in multifamily. No, I am seeing it across the board. In the last 30 days, properties that were in contract for multifamily have fallen out of contract because lenders are simply unwilling to finance them at that level. Because with interest rates having gone up on the multifamily side, the property is not cash flowing. It's losing money on the first day. So lenders are stepping back and saying, oh, I'm not going to finance this sucker. you know, it's just not making money. I don't want to finance a property that's going to lose money on day one in the hope that rents will go up. And while today rents are increasing at a dramatic rate, no one yet knows, I don't know, the impact of this abrupt pivot, this slowdown in the next, you know, 90 days. Maybe in July, if I come back to your show, I'll be able to say, okay, well, here's how much rents were impacted. But right now, I'm guessing everyone else is guessing. April to June of this year, great time to sit on the sidelines with money and say, let me see what's happening, right? Because I think there are buying opportunities. That's the good news, right? There are no buying opportunities when the market is perfect. And we've had a perfect market for the last 12 months. Everything goes up, home prices go up, rents go up, and unemployment goes down. Incomes go up much faster than traditional. You know, incomes in the US have been increasing twice as fast. So we've had the perfect market. Well, then there's no opportunity in a perfect market, right? Sure, you can build your own, but you certainly can't buy anything. That's where you're getting a deal. But I think there's about to be some deals available. And it sort of depends on whether the Fed manages to bring the plane in for a soft landing or we go into a recession.
Right. And no one can predict those interest rates either. I mean, are we looking at 7% by the end of the year? Or could we see 10% next year? And there's no way to know that for sure. You know, it is possible that if they have to curtail inflation, that they could drastically increase interest rates.
Yes. And you know what happens is folks who are older, right? So let's say you're 50 years old, you remember what the Fed did in the 80s where they Volcker raised interest rates all the way to 18%. So you remember that that is possible. But that is unfortunately a false equivalence. So back in the 80s, US federal debt was a tiny, teeny, tiny fraction of what it is today. So currently we are, you know, over $20 trillion in debt. We were a few trillion in debt in the 80s. So the Fed had the capability of raising interest rates beyond a certain point just to cool a market down. They do not have that freedom today because once interest rates go up, I mean, right now the interest rates are right about half a point and they're talking about another 8 interest rate increases, which could happen. 8 increases is about a 2% hike in rates. But you might say, oh, so does that mean you were just saying, Neil, we were at 3.11% and today you're at 5.11. So does that mean that if the Fed hikes interest rates by another 8 times, we'll go to 7.11? No, because in that time frame, interest rates were only raised by the Fed by 0.25 point, but mortgages have gone up by 2 points. So the market is pricing in future interest rate hikes. Currently, the market has priced in 8 of them, only though one has taken place. 2 are about to take place in May. So at the May meeting, the Fed's basically saying, we're going to raise them faster. So instead of doing a 0.25 point increase, we'll do a 0.5 point. But the market is actually now pricing in 8 different hikes. And because of those 8 different hikes, mortgage rates have already risen by 0.25 points, which is 2 points together, right? So the market prices this stuff in. So if 8 interest rate hikes take place this year, will we be at 7%? The answer is absolutely not. That math makes no sense. The only scenario in which we would be at 7% by the end of the year is if all of these 8 interest rate hikes did not work and inflation still shows up at 8% in December. Now the market will start pricing in another 8 hikes into the future because the Fed's failing at controlling inflation. But it's very, very unlikely. We are a much better managed economy today than the 80s where we had the oil shock, or the early 80s, late 70s, where they had the oil shock. We manage the economy much more aggressively these days. So there is no scenario that I know of where interest rates go to 10%. And if they do go to 10%, I'll immediately start predicting that they'll come down because the US economy will go into a recession within months of rates going to 7.5%. Housing is such a huge portion of the economy compared to the 80s. We're a much bigger portion of the economy that if you crush a portion of the economy like that, you can't sustain economic growth. So you're basically crash landing the plane. You know it's going to go into a recession and then you'll try and get it out of a recession. So there are no truthful scenarios where interest rates either go to 7% or stay at 7%. They may go to 7% for a few weeks or a few months because, you know, everyone's trying to price these things. Everyone's trying to stay ahead of interest rate hikes. But if they stay at more than 7%, we're basically in a recession. Obviously, you don't want high interest rates in a recession. The Fed will cut them very quickly. And they tend to cut much faster than they increase, right? Because that's less dangerous. So No, there's no scenario where interest rates, in my mind, are at 7% or 10% at the end of this year. It's just simply the math doesn't work. And there's one more piece to this that I want to say, Doc. If interest rates in the US, and I'm not talking about mortgage rates now, I'm not talking about the mortgage rates. Remember, those kind of, you know, are ahead of the actual interest rate hikes. Let's say the Fed actually hikes interest rates by 20 times. I'm making this number up, right? How would the United States pay interest on its debt? We've gathered so much debt that the United States can't take the Fed's interest rates, not mortgage rates, but the Fed's interest rates at more than 3%. Once you hit 3%, everyone's immediately talking about defaulting. So all the politicians who talk about not interfering with the Fed are going to pick up the phone and call the Federal Reserve and going to say, what the heck are you guys doing? We can't pay our debt anymore. We're going to go into default. That's 100 times more dangerous than inflation, right? Default is the worst possible scenario for the US to be in, right? We are the reserve currency of the world. We go into default, we immediately crash the rest of the world's markets, right? So when we start getting closer to default, these politicians are going to basically say to Mr. Powell, look, either you bring the rates down or I find another Fed government.
Mm. Yeah, it seems like there is a ceiling there based on our financial situation that we're in as a country. What about the temptation to lever at this point because of how high inflation is? You know, if you're borrowing debt at, you know, 4 or 5% today with inflation at 8-9%, that can be really tempting. Can you give like a pro and against to that argument?
There's not a lot of pros, and I'll tell you why. You look at the last 10 years, inflation in the US was at 1.5%. So it's fair to say that developed economies tend to have low inflation. We've had high inflation in the economy tied to a weird one-time event called COVID. That event is waning. Today, number of cases both in the US and worldwide are the lowest. Number of deaths in the US and worldwide are the lowest in the last 2 years. So obviously there's an impact. There's a waning impact of that one-time event that has caused inflation because of crazy supply chain madness, like toilet paper, right? Crazy stuff has happened. So as that crazy stuff wanes, most economies in the world are going to go downwards. And one of the key things that we say in real estate, and you should know as an investor, is don't fight the Fed. Don't fight the Fed, because nobody's won so far in the last 20 years fighting the Fed. When you say, I'm going to lever up high because inflation is high, you're saying, I don't believe that the Fed will control inflation. I believe that inflation will be wild for a significant amount of time. I think that is an extraordinarily dangerous way of thinking. It has nothing to do with data, because data shows that the Fed eventually, you know, brings things down when inflation is high. Unfortunately, they almost always crash land the economy, which I think there's a better than 50% chance that we'll go into a recession, because the Fed basically makes guesses on how to slow down inflation. Sometimes they overguess. And sometimes if they underguess, it'll still bring it down from 8.5%, which is, you know, developed economies do not stay at 8.5%. Anybody that thinks that a developed economy will stay at 8.5% for, let's say, the next 12 months does not understand how aggressive the Fed is being right now, talking about 8 hikes. Simply conversation of the Fed talking about 8 hikes slows the US economy, right? And the moment we slow it down, we slow down inflation, then you're fighting against this concept of, well, I should overlever. So in my mind, please, please do not overlever. This is a very bad time to overlever. You should actually be considering going from 75% leverage to 70% leverage, because that's what's supposed to happen in times when something is out of control. Obviously, at this point, it's inflation.
And how does that tie into rental income? I mean, let's circle back from macroeconomics to multifamily real estate. So how does that inflation harm or help real estate rental income? Is there a direct correlation, or is rental rate growth faster or less than inflation? Does it depend on the market? And can you expound on that?
Absolutely. In a healthy marketplace, inflation is directly correlated with rents. We've seen that as we recovered, you know, we only went into recession for about 3 to 6 months after COVID. And so since then, it's been a recovery, and it's been a gradual recovery. Jobs, you know, unemployment rates have very steadily come down. I think we're under 4% now. In a healthy economy, inflation is directly correlated to rents. And rents typically tend to be higher than inflation. That is why we've seen the highest inflation since the 80s, correct? In the last, 6 months. And you've noticed we've seen the highest rents of all time, right? Highest rents of all time, highest rent increases of all time, right? 13 to 18% increases. My markets have seen as much as 44%. Austin was 44%. San Antonio, one of my other markets, is at 29%. But the US as a whole is 18%. So rents have risen faster than inflation, even though inflation has been massively high. So in a good time, when the economy is running at 4% unemployment or thereabouts, it's doing well, direct correlation. In bad times, though, let us say that the Fed does what I think it will do. They will crash land the economy because they simply have no choice. When inflation gets out of control, the Fed basically has to crash land the economy, right? So when they do that, if the economy goes into recession, you could still for a while have inflation because inflation is hard to back off immediately. It's going to slow down, but it's going to go down. At that point, the correlation between rents and inflation breaks. So during that recession time, there is no correlation that my data science shows, right? But then when the recovery starts, the correlation gets reestablished. So if we go into a recession, basically like everybody else, I'll probably basically keep my rents, about the same. Now, what's interesting though is this. This is one of the favorite things that I tell people about data science. Most people think that if home prices go down 30%, if apartment prices go down 30%, rents will go down 30%. Actually, there has never, ever been any data to support that for any market in the US. So for example, 2008, worst real estate recession of all time, single family goes down 30 to 70%, multifamily goes down 30%, right? And most people are like, if I ask them this question, what do you think rents went down by? If I give them this data, they're going to say, 30 to 70%, obviously. No, rents in the US decreased by 3% in 1 year. And then they spiked so quickly that you almost didn't lose any money because there was a little divot there, but then you had this massive increase after that. So if you owned all the way through, there was no actual impact. You basically just had, a downward and an upward movement that evened itself out. So rents are very inflexible, like oil prices. Oil prices are very inflexible because there's so much demand for them and it's very consistent. Rents are very inflexible. So when a recession occurs, typically rents just flatten or they'll go down 1 or 2%. And at that point, it's lucrative enough for renters to basically put the money in and then they tend to move up again. Even in a real estate depression, 2009 was a real estate depression, not recession. We still only had 1 year of 3% declines in rents. So hopefully that answers the question, right? Good market, strong correlation. During a recession, rents tend to flatten. Post-recession, they tend to reestablish the correlation.
In broad strokes, do you think multifamily is still a good quality asset class for us to be allocating capital for the next 5 years?
I think it's become better. So what COVID did was it, in a weird sort of way, obviously nothing to do with the industry, improved multifamily as an asset class, right? And I'm just lucky to be in there. This has nothing to do with data science at all. It just was just luck because it did two things. It created an incredible appreciation for the average American of the place they lived in. So people want more space. They want to live in more single families. They want to have offices. They want to have basically more space. And the fact that only at this point, that there's a vendor that counts key swipes at US offices, right? They're counting key swipes. As of yesterday, the number of key swipes were at 43% of the key swipes in February 2020. So even though technically workers are back to the office, they're just not coming in as often. Well, if they're not coming in, they need more real estate. So in a weird sort of way, COVID created a massive amount of appreciation for real estate in general. And obviously multifamily is a big beneficiary of that. But there's another factor that most people haven't looked at. I think office was the largest asset class in the US. There was more money in office until 2016 than in any other asset class. So multifamily was smaller than office as an asset class. And then right around 2016, they became equal. And then since then, multifamily has been a little larger. Now, since COVID, multifamily is massively larger than the US office market because there's all these gloom doom predictions where people are saying, even if a tiny percentage of the people that have been working from home, even if a tiny percentage of them don't come back, that would basically push office values back 10 full years. 10 years. And that's assuming the tiny percentage, which I don't believe because I'm following the key swipes. And at this point, COVID is at the lowest level in the US since the beginning of the recession and only 43%, 44% of the key swipes. something has fundamentally changed. If it's changed, the office market is hurt. So what we are seeing happening is that the smart money in office, the big money, the $10 billion plus operators are moving their assets from office to multifamily. Hotels are moving their assets, even though right now hotels are doing really well. I don't see any evidence that hotels are doing poorly. So some of this is mental, where people are like, you know what? I didn't invest in multifamily before. I wanted, because there were other asset classes that were better. I mean, imagine this. When I go and talk with people about hotels, they're like, why do you do multifamily? I mean, you have to deal with all this shit. You have all these tenants that only have $400 in the bank, and you have delinquency, and you have, you know, class C properties have gunshots. Why do you deal with this? I mean, I build this beautiful hotel. Rich people come stay there. I love it. And the office guys say the same thing. You guys are idiots. You know, in one property, you have 200 tenants to deal with, and I have like four tenants, and I have 10-year leases, and you guys have one-year leases, right? That was their approach and their attitude pre-COVID. None of them think like that today. So that makes multifamily, to answer your question, a significantly better asset class for reasons that have nothing to do with me or data science.
Let's wrap up this podcast with GrowCapitus. What is the future for GrowCapitus? What do you envision happening here in the next 2 to 5 years?
We're focused on COVID having changed people's mentality. And that mentality is, I want more space. I want more room. We think that's a 10-year change. We don't think it's a one-year change. That's why I'm so obsessed with tracking key swipes. And because of that, we are now pushing to our database to where only 30% of what we will spend money on is value-add multifamily. 70% of it is new construction, low-density multifamily. It's called build-to-rent. So we're spending more of our time building townhome style, let's call it medium density. So it's not really as low-density as single-family. It's not as high-density as apartments. And we're seeing incredible uptake. For the ones that we've already built, we're leasing at so many hundreds of dollars above. You know, some of you guys are multifamily investors, and you often hear these pitches, we're going to raise rents over 5 years by $150 a unit or $200 a unit, correct? And that when we do that, we'll double your money. So that's a very common thing to say. We're getting $300, $400 pops for new construction on the day of first lease. And we don't even push the rents when we're first leasing because we have a big property to lease up. We're still getting that. That's 7 years of rent growth that we're getting on day one because of the way people think after COVID. So that's our future. We think the best asset class in the next 10 years is new construction multifamily in built to rent, so medium density, not apartments, in the same data-centric markets that we've looked at before, places where we've made our investors a huge amount of money. We have one of the highest IRR rates in the industry. And we're doubling down on it because we're seeing people move away from cities because of the ability to work remotely. So all of these weird markets that nobody has heard of, now we're seeing institutional billion-dollar players entering these markets. They would laugh at these markets 2 years ago. So we're basically doubling down on these smaller much smaller markets because we believe there's more money there now than there was pre-COVID.
Awesome. Neil Bawa, thank you so much for coming onto the show. It's a pleasure and an honor to have you here. So thank you so much. I want to plug GrowCapitus.com, GrowCapitus.com. Again, Neil, thank you so much.
Thank you. One last thing that I wanted to say is if you Google my name, just N-E-A-L-B-A-W-A, followed by data science or location magic, that's where that course is. And that's a great place to start for your own real estate investing endeavors.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me, Doc.
Okay, guys, another fantastic episode in the books. Pleasure to have Neil Bawa come onto the show and give his insight and his numbers-based approach to multifamily investing. As a reminder, check out growcapitus.com. If you're interested in investing with other physicians, please visit us at digcapital.com, digcapital.com. Take care, guys. Until next time.